We are joined by photographer and Lightroom instructor Brian Matias for a discussion about how he started using his iPhone for taking photos and to get some insight on how Lightroom can become part of your mobile workflow. Rather than look at our recent photos, we will be checking out some of Brian's work and get the best tip I've ever seen on Lightroom's masking feature. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the iPhonography Podcast. I'm Greg McMillan, your host, and I have my good buddy and co-host with me, Mr. Dave Bodner. Hello, David.
Hey, Greg. How's it going today?
It's going really well. Tonight, as you can see on the screen, there's no hiding it because we're live, we have Brian Matias with us, who is a photographer. He is what I would consider to be a Lightroom expert, and Photoshop for that matter. He's an author. He has written articles for Digital Photo Pro Magazine, Digital Photo Magazine, Photoshop User Magazine, and he's a YouTube creator. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the invite to be on.
Yeah. This is going to be fun. I stumbled across your channel. I think it was a suggested channel when I was watching, you know, stuff about the iPhone and whatnot. And I really liked it and thought, you know, hey, this is pretty cool. We're going to get to this tip later. I'm pretty excited about that. But so, you know, for anybody that hasn't heard of you, just give everybody like a, I always say like in a tweet, just a rundown of who you are.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm primarily first and foremost a photo educator. And I've had the good fortune of having a pretty interesting career in this space where I've worked at Google on like the Google Photos team, and it used to be the Google Plus Photos team. And I've worked at Wacom and Topaz Labs and On1. But I've also had my own business where I would create photo education content. So that's what I've been doing pretty much nonstop for a while now. And that's YouTube articles, but also it's building high-end courses focusing specifically on Lightroom. I would say that's the focal point for me is the Lightroom, the cloud-based Lightroom. So Lightroom on desktop and mobile and web. And then also really, really bullish about mobile photography as well.
Yeah. So let's touch on that. How you got a little more, I guess you could say a little more serious about the mobile photography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've been an iPhone user for, I think since the 3GS was the first one. I refused to buy an iPhone until it supported 3G. And it just really frustrated me that the first, I think, two generations, if I remember correctly, were still Edge. Yeah. So, you know, for there was a good span there where the iPhone camera was more of kind of like a toy camera, like a novelty. And it was almost more of the thing you needed to get the photo so that you can use some cool app like Hipstamatic, you know, which I loved Hipstamatic. I'm happy to see that they're still kind of around and trying to, you know, keep things fresh. But yeah, you know, it wasn't really until I mean, like I said, I've been enjoying mobile photography for years and years, but the iPhone 14 Pro Max was the one that really kind of started, you know, changing things for me when I saw that Apple was like, all right, there, you could see what all the other Android manufacturers were doing, and putting larger sensors and better optics. And so when Apple put out the 48 megapixel sensor on the main camera with the 14 Pro Max and their Pro RAW format through their Photonics engine, I was like, okay, cool. And then the 15 Pro Max kind of iterated on that with the 5x lens. So yeah, I mean, long answer to a short question. I've enjoyed it for a long, long time, but I only past couple of years really kind of saw the potential of okay, maybe I could possibly leave my Sony camera at home for this trip, depending on what it was.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously the inclusion of a 48 megapixel sensor, I mean, that's turned a lot of heads.
Yeah.
You know, especially with, you know, like pro DSLR photographers who haven't really paid a lot of attention to the iPhone or the mobile space. I mean, I'm sure some of them have used the Samsung Galaxy, you know, S22, 23, whatever they were, whenever it started to come out with that larger sensor, you know, you could get pretty serious with your photography with the right technique and the right workflow, I think, when you got a sensor like that. I'm really impressed with the 48 megapixel. It really does a good job, and the versatility that comes with it, you know,
right,
the pixel binning and all that stuff. So now we talked about, like we mentioned that you're a Lightroom, like I call you a Lightroom expert because you really, you know how to get around it. You have a, entity, I guess you could call it, called Lightroom. Oh gosh. Lightroom Everywhere. I knew it started with E. Sorry. Yeah. I've been looking at so much stuff lately. So Lightroom Everywhere is what? Cause it's interesting.
I appreciate you asking. It started out as the course. So here's the thing. So Lightroom Classic came out in 2007 and all was well for a long time. Then 2017, Adobe released Lightroom Desktop, but it was called like Lightroom CC. There was Lightroom. It went through a few iterations of branding changes, but I liked that concept of you add your photos to your library and you don't have to deal with any local catalog. The photos are just synced to the cloud. Anyone who is an iPhone photographer, that workflow is far more familiar than what Lightroom Classic is, which is a local catalog-based image management, or a DAM, you know, digital asset manager. So for a while, I was using Lightroom. I backed up my entire photo library to Lightroom in the cloud. But for years, whenever I'd create a tutorial on YouTube, I would still use Lightroom Classic because the vast, vast majority of my users used Classic. And it wasn't until last year, so early first quarter or so of last year, maybe second quarter, I can't remember, I was just done with it. I'm like, you know what? I would look on YouTube, or I would do a Google search for Lightroom tutorials. And they were, 99.9% of them were for Lightroom Classic. And so I saw this opportunity here. It was twofold. One, no one's serving the Lightroom crowd, the Lightroom user base, the Lightroom crowd. No one. Two, I felt very disingenuous that I use Lightroom, but I'm teaching Lightroom Classic.
So
I made the decision and I was like, I know I'm going to lose people. People are going to get angry at me or upset with me, even though I don't know why. It's not like it's a cancer diagnosis. It's just a photo editing app. But man, when I made the announcement, there were people who were really excited. There were people who were just really, as if I somehow double crossed them. Fine. But I felt a lot better because now I can just focus on this. So to answer, again, long answer to short question, there was no cohesive body of work, no like single thing that teaches you everything. I mean, literally everything about the Lightroom cloud-based ecosystem on desktop, on iPhone, and an iPad. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to create this thing, this course. And the idea for the name of the course came from my wife. We were just sitting up eating breakfast, and she's a marketing savant. And She's like, Lightroom everywhere. I was like, that's brilliant. So the brand or the name initially started as the course, and it was, I'm so grateful that it was well received. And I wanted to kind of build on that. Like, all right, well, maybe I will change my newsletter to be Lightroom Everywhere, which I did. So then now it's kind of branded as Lightroom Everywhere. And then I started doing, I'm trying to do weekly, like similar to you, like a live show, a live stream called Lightroom Everywhere. So I'm kind of rallying the brand away from what was Matias.com, even though it's still at my website. And I own LightroomEverywhere.com, the domain. But I thought it would be fun. I mean, we looked through Adobe's legal documents, their branding guidelines, like everything we're doing so far is okay. Like we're not infringing on the, and you have to be really cognizant of that. Same thing with iPhone. You know,
oh yeah, iPhone mattered.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where and ultimately what sealed the deal, it kind of made, was very gratifying, was in October when Adobe, at their Adobe Max conference, they released the update to Lightroom that has local browse, which was, it was not the last nail in Lightroom Classic's coffin. It was probably the first one, but it was a big one, because that was a very clear indication. This is just pure conjecture on my part, but that told me that, okay, Adobe's making some big strides to want to consolidate their Lightroom presence to one app. And by far the biggest complaint that Lightroom Classic users had, they have several, they have numerous complaints, but the first one's like, I'm not going to be forced into syncing my photos to the cloud. I'm not paying Adobe for more storage. And so this takes that away. I mean, you have the full editing suite. There are, I would say, two or three features that are missing from local that the cloud version has in Lightroom. Aside from that, it still boggles my mind just how versatile the local version of Lightroom is.
Yeah. It's you know, I never really had Lightroom until the mobile thing came out, and with the free version and whatnot. And it is very well, you know, it's like a fine tuned engine. It works so well, but that's no surprise because Adobe has a lot of people working there. And a lot of people working on Lightroom, I suspect. But Dave, you've been using Lightroom a little more, say, in the last year. But again, it's the free version, which is great. I mean, I used the free version for a long time before I finally bit the bullet and paid for it. What do you like about Lightroom, say, over something like Darkroom or Photomator even?
Yeah. Well, I don't really, I don't use Darkroom. So it's really between Photomator and Adobe Lightroom. And honestly, the main reason why I did not really come from a heavy photography background, I never had DSLR or SLR. You know, I went from point and shoot to iPhone. So I never learned Adobe, either Photoshop or Lightroom. You know, so I didn't have that graphics background. And all I know is people who were using it, once you got to learn it, it was great. But the learning curve was always steep on Adobe products. And so I didn't even think about trying Lightroom. Also, I didn't realize they had a free version available. You know, especially for something, if you're coming in blind, you're like, okay, I know, you know, here's the lower cost ones, because I don't really want to sink a lot of time and effort. You know, I don't want to sink money into something unless I have a chance to try it out and to see if it's even for me or not. So, yeah, there's the challenging photos, I would say. That's when I go to Lightroom a little bit more often. You know, the ones that need a little bit more cleaning up, or the sky, the star photos I do, you know, the dark sky photos, because it can have a lot more, it has a lot more oomph behind it to clean up and fix, especially given the amount of light pollution I have around me.
Yeah. And I find the, and Brian, I'm sure you'd probably do too, that the, some of the adjustments that are present in Lightroom Mobile are, you know, not necessarily available in some of the other apps. You know, like the dehaze slider is a night photographer's best friend.
Yeah. It's a great slider.
Yeah. You know, our pal Shane Mostyn in Australia, he's got a YouTube channel just for night photography, and he uses that slider just literally with every edit he does when he does a star photo or whatever. And it's a very powerful program. So let's see. Let's hit the chat room here real quick. We got a few people in there. Scott Baker, he's been.
Scott's been emailing with me.
Yeah.
He sent me a few emails today.
Scott just said how he loves his dehaze slider. Yeah. That's magic.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That dehaze, I mean, even for daytime shots, you know, you're going, even taking a shot through glass, it could help out so much. But just. Yeah. You know, if you're getting near, if you're having a little bit of haze or literally dehaze, you know, it's a little humid and maybe it's not crisp and clear as you want it. You just, it's like literally magic because I know it's doing multiple adjustments at the same time.
Yeah. And the thing you also have to, you should remember something like the dehaze sliders. It's not a kind of an absolute zero slider where it starts at zero and goes to 100. You can also bring it to the negative, which helps if you want to create a kind of like a soft focus, kind of glowy ethereal look, a very, very faux Orton type of look. And you know, it's like kind of salt. Dehaze is one of those things where in just a little bit can go a long way. And oftentimes I will bind that just to the to a sky mask. So I'll have Lightroom's adaptive selection tool select the sky and only use dehaze for the sky. And it, especially if it's like a blue sky with some clouds, it just punches it up really nicely. It's very much, it almost, I wouldn't say that I would tell you not to pack a polarizer filter anymore, but in the event that you forgot one or, you know, it broke. That does a really great job of simulating the effect of a polarizer.
So just real quick, we have Scott, we've got Will Newcomb from China is watching. And we've got Ray Bozinski from Southeast Michigan. Yeah, Southeast Michigan. And Kevin Barrett from Michigan as well. West Michigan. So, you know, thank you everybody for joining us. And okay, so we're going to look at some of Brian's images tonight instead of, you know, looking at our recent photos, which is a regular segment on the show. But before we do that, Brian, can we just kind of get a glimpse of your masking technique for the sky that you've discovered? I think this is absolutely brilliant.
My pleasure. I'll share my screen right now.
Yep.
Can you see it? You should be able to see it now.
Yes.
Yes.
So cool. So this is one of the photos I had sent you, Greg. And it just, the reason why I have it up is because it actually illustrates it. I just want to preface, like, and I was telling this to you, Greg, just a little bit before we started, but I don't know how I found this. Like when I show it to you, you'll agree that it is completely counterintuitive.
Yeah.
I published a video at this point, it would have been about 8 months ago on my channel. And it was I'll back it up really quickly, but, it was a tutorial video, a Lightroom, I can't remember if it was a Lightroom or Lightroom Classic, but it was a full start to finish editing workflow video. And part of that workflow video is showing that sky technique. And I didn't even think anything of it when I showed it. It was just something I did. So I don't even remember how I would have found this technique. I just included it. Flash forward 5 months after, 5.5 months after, someone messaged me and was like, that sky thing, can you do a separate video on that? And that's one of my favorite things. I'm so, so, so grateful when someone contacts me and asks, basically gives me an idea, because that can be difficult. And I had forgotten about that technique. And so I made that video, my secret sky technique. And yeah, that video took off. Actually, if you go into the comments, one of the things that I was so amazed with is one of the Adobe engineers who built the UI for masking. He's like, I did not know that, and shared it with the team. And he left a comment right there. And so I was really, that was very encouraging. And you know, I'll show it to you now, but I just wanted to kind of preface, this is not any, I'm not a genius. I'm not like, so this was, I must've just kind of like, let's try this thing out. And so,
just throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing if it sticks.
Seeing which noodles stick. So let's say here I want to make a selection of the sky to make edits locally there. So in Lightroom, you've got this. Actually, let me turn on my cursor there.
I think it should be mentioned too, Brian, that this works exactly the same on Lightroom Mobile.
That is 100% correct.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of this, is that what I show you here, you can replicate exactly on Lightroom Mobile.
Because I did it.
Awesome.
And it's really sweet.
It works really well. So I'll go to the over here. This is the masking mode. And I'm going to click on select sky. And so I've got the overlay set to 100%. And so you can see, if you like, pay attention to like this area here. When I toggle the overlay, do you see this kind of yellow?
Yeah, like bleed, a bleed through. It's almost like a bleed through there.
Yeah, it's like a feather over the horizon, which is weird because this should be a no-brainer for Lightroom. It's a hard, high contrast edge of the horizon. So I'm going to keep this. I'll rename this one as or default LR mask. And then I'm going to create another mask, same exact mask, sky. And I'll show you the trick of this kind of like secret trick. So let's rename this secret mask. So here's how it works. You make the sky selection just like you did before. And then what you're going to do is you're going to click on subtract right over here. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow you to select one of the other selection tools to subtract from the selection you made. The selection we just made was sky. So I'm going to go ahead and subtract the sky, which makes absolutely no sense. Like, why would you select what you just selected? Or why would you remove what you just selected?
and for the audio listeners of the podcast, there is a link to Brian's YouTube channel and the particular video where he shows this, if you want to see how this is done. But right now, this is basically for our live viewers of the YouTube video and anybody who comes across this later on. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. So, and no, it's a great distinction because there is a video, a short, much shorter video that really dives into this. So far what we've done was we've made the sky selection and then we removed the sky selection. And so the last part of this is with that remove layer selected, so you can see it's highlighted in blue, you're going to go to the ellipse on that layer and you're going to go to invert sky selection. And so now check this out. So here is the original sky. And then that is the secret sky. So do you see how much cleaner? Notice the entire sky is selected, but this is what I would argue the version that you would want. Because if you're going to make edits to the sky, you don't necessarily want them to bleed onto the horizon. And so there is one, I don't know, feature that I would love to see, because there is merit to this sky mask. The reason the merit is the fact that it does feather. This mask will give you a hard edge. So you know for a fact that with this mask, the secret mask, that's going to give you a really hard edge. Now this photo is already edited, so if I add dehaze, it's just going to just overdo it. But you at least know that it's going to be a very clean selection. However, sometimes you do want a little bit of a fall off. You want a little bit of spill with a feather. And so I'm not saying that you should never use the default Lightroom mask and you should only use this kind of secret technique. If there is, the effect that you apply, if the adjustment you make to the sky, it becomes apparent that the hard edge creates a weird halo effect, for example, then I would recommend trying or using the default mask. And there's more that you can do. Like there's more to refine the mask, but that's the basic technique. You really quickly, you go and you create the mask, you select sky, and then you subtract sky and you invert that subtraction. And I created a preset actually. I think I created a preset that I gave away. If I remember correctly, yes. I did. Yep. Okay, cool. And so you can basically automate that. So let me delete the masks. And if I go to my presets browser here, better sky mask. And so you don't have to do any of that stuff. You could just click this and that preset automatically does everything I showed you. So it's just like a one click better sky mask. That's the secret sky mask technique.
Yeah, and it works really well. If you have some tricky branches or things like that, some things that are getting in the way of the mask or that is bleeding through, and really works well. So we're going to look at some of your pictures.
Sure.
And one of them is that. So I guess we could we'll look at it anyway, real quick.
Yeah, there's a story. I mean, a kind of an anecdote to it for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So let me bring up the images and then share my screen. There. So this first one, yeah. This is so cool.
Yeah, that was just taken a few weeks ago. I had one of my close friend that I've known for a long time. He just happened, while we lived in Portland, Oregon, I live in Southern Florida now, and he was in town for work, but he had a weekend off. So he stayed with us and he asked me, he told me that one of his bucket list items always was to do an airboat ride in the Everglades in Florida. And so, an airboat's like one, it's just like a boat with a gigantic fan strapped on the back, and that propels you. And because there's nothing under the water in terms of like a motor, you can go over anything pretty much. Anyway, so we were on this airboat, just the two of us and the driver. And I've been really enjoying this app called Reheld by a company called Reflex. And it's a really nifty app because it basically locks onto something that it determines. This is my assumption of how it works, but it locks onto some sort of subject that should be stationary and it masks that. So that it keeps that solid. And then everything else that it detects as movement, it kind of creates that full long exposure feel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so, exactly how it works. I was on the alpha, I guess you could say, of that app. And I mean, when I first tried it, things were kind of jumping all over the place. But it was like not even near ready to be released, obviously, if it's an alpha version of it. It locks on to something static in the image. So, if you didn't have the boat included in that photo, right, it would just be a jumble mess. It's a it's a really good app for doing handheld long exposures. Now, as far as editing on this one, now Scott Baker's, I can't see the chat right now, but he's probably saying something to me about, you know, the horizon line. I'm a real stickler for a level straight horizon line, but okay, in so this case, it works.
That was very intentional. That's a Dutch tilt.
Yeah.
I know that's a, I have actually plenty. I could show you plenty of straight versions and I could straighten that in Lightroom in 2 seconds. Sure. In fact, I might have even, much to Scott's dismay, if he is dismayed, I might have accentuated that Dutch angle even more a little bit in the with crop, you know, with the crop tool. Just because at that far kind of almost vanishing point, you see the channel that we were on start to curve.
Yeah.
And so I felt like one, the orientation of the boat kind of has that, gives you that sense of leaning over. But also as the channel starts to curve, I feel like that angle, the tilt suits the composition itself. But also, so that was the iPhone 15 Pro Max with the I use Maven filters. They're primarily like more like mirrorless DSLR. Therefore, I mean, actually they could be for anything. I have the filter adapter through the Polar Pro case that I use. And so I had a linear polarizer on this for this image, which brought out the blue and created the contrast with the clouds and also made the grass in the Everglades, the grass that you see there, a bit punchier.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Especially for this shot, that tilt just adds that extra element of motion.
Exactly, right.
Yeah,
what I'm going for. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I could probably really quickly, let me see if I can pull up.
And I mean, honestly, being in Southern Florida, this is just my ignorance. I'm guessing everything's kind of flat anyway.
Yeah. That's a great, yeah. So we, yeah,
yeah.
There are no hills down there.
No, and I'm not even exaggerating. The highest hill is the Pompano Beach landfill. I'm not joking.
Mm-hmm.
Right off of the Florida Turnpike. I wish I was joking, but that is the highest point around us.
It's like Shane Mawson says, if you stood on a tuna can, you could see for miles.
Yeah, basically.
where he is in Australia, it is just as flat. Like flat.
Oh, that's
flat.
Right. Shane is in. That's right. He does all the.
Yeah.
So I hear this is just like a different version, kind of a sloppy edit. So the horizon line is straight, and it doesn't. The boat is slightly angled because we were kind of starting to veer towards the left here. But I find that, like, whereas if I were to crop this really quickly, let's see here. I mean, I guess that could work too, but
yeah. Yeah, it does actually.
Yeah. So like, but I also have versions of like that without that was just using either the re-expose app or Moment. I would switch between them so you can kind of see what it's like as is. I just find it much more boring. But you can also see here, I mean, talking about when it kind of malfunctions, the reheld app, you can kind of see, I don't know if it comes through, but that weird frame. Yeah. So,
yeah. So in the alpha, that would be very predominant. Like it would be,
I was
like
wondering if that's what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's no frames lining up.
Yeah. They've done, I mean, if that's the case, and I mean, kudos to them because they did a really good job of making it consistently good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very good. So this next one, it looks kind of like an infrared.
You're correct.
Touch to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the Maven, infrared filter. It's a 720 nanometer infrared filter, and you know that mounted on the front of the iPhone main camera lens. And I applied kind of like a 16 by 10, I think, or like an aggressive, that's a regular 4x3 photo that I cropped to make it look more like a pano or a widescreen. But this was taken at the Murakami Japanese Gardens, not far from me in Boca Raton. It was our first time visiting there, and I thought it would be a cool opportunity to anything where you have those kind of organics, the foliage and stuff, you know, the infrared makes that like white, but it's still, it's very challenging with the iPhone to take that photo. A good friend of mine who leads the Chicago Photography School, his name is Nick Sinat, just a fantastic guy. He's been experimenting a lot with infrared. He's the one that inspired me to start playing around with iPhone infrared. And because there are a lot of challenges that you'll face with using an infrared filter, one of which you might even be able to still see it here, but infrared is notorious for creating these hot spots in the center of the frame, right in the center.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so this, what you're seeing here is kind of the result of several radial filters in Lightroom to try to soften the exposure in the center there. But if you look kind of to the left of that little structure, you can see how it's kind of brighter. But I'm still really excited about it. And it's just cool to be able to put an infrared filter in front of the iPhone, and it doesn't look like that out of camera. It doesn't look like that at all.
No,
it requires a lot of massaging.
Filmic First Light has an infrared type of thing built into it. I don't believe it looks like this though, but so there are some camera apps that probably have some of that stuff built in, but I think you'll have better results with a filter, to be honest with you. You know, it's obviously meant to give you this look, and it'll be more of a genuine infrared look to it, I think.
Yeah, my kind of philosophy, and not just with mobile, but with photography in general, is if you can do it optically, that will surpass any form of digital manipulation. Same goes for iPhone, like even with focal length, like that's why I'm kind of excited to see what companies are doing for lenses for the iPhone, like Reflex, like Moment. Because if I can adapt my focal length optically, as opposed to cropping, for example, any day of the week, that's what I would rather do. Same thing with infrared.
Yeah, for sure. So, Dave, you want to just go through the chat room there for
a minute? Sure. Now, there is a question here. What is the difference between a linear and circular polarizer from Scott Baker?
Sure. It's funny because it's one of those things where the old is new again. It used to be for the longest time you would use the polarizers would be linear polarizers. That doesn't mean that they're static. They still rotate just like a circular polarizer. When digital SLRs started growing in popularity, linear polarizers messed with them. With the ability, I can't remember if it was the ability to meter or the ability to focus, but linear polarizers caused an issue with DSLR sensors. And so the solution was to create a circular polarizer. It's just the way the filter is stacked. The polarizers. So, with mirrorless and with iPhones, linear polarizers are actually, I mean, they're not the better or worse, but they're kind of more, they're more closely aligned because circular polarizers are primarily for DSLR. So if you're using a DSLR, you should certainly be using a circular polarizer. The cool thing is that if you have a circular polarizer and a linear polarizer, if you take the circular polarizer and you mount that on first, and then you stack the linear on top of it, when you rotate the linear polarizer, that is effectively a variable neutral density filter. You can adjust the darkness of your of the filter by rotating the linear polarizer. It's super cool. Not saying that you need to go out and buy a linear polarizer if you've got a circular, unless you're if you're a DSLR shooter, you should definitely have a circular polarizer. But if you've got a circular polarizer and you're a mirrorless shooter or you're an iPhone shooter, you're fine. Don't worry about it. It's just, that's kind of where I go now. But it's a good question. It's a very good question.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
It looks like Will had a very similar question about polarizers and
polarizer and there. Maurice Backley says, cool shot. Been using Spectre for this effect. So he's talking about the first image.
Spectre's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what though? I've tested Spectre and against Reheld, and I did like Reheld a little better. The first time I used them, Spectre lost its steadiness by the 30-second mark, and Reheld held it like an iron fist right all the way through.
I could be wrong. I thought that Spectre is more like you really should be on a tripod for that, similar to re-expose.
Well, Spectre is meant to do handheld.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know why. All right. In that case, no, I never got especially good results handheld with Spectre. I got good results with tripod. I actually have a video.
Yeah. Yeah, with a tripod, it's great.
Yeah. But Reheld is actually meant not to use a tripod.
Yeah. I mean, some people do, and you can, but it works just as good, I think, you know, without a tripod. So I think that's pretty much all the questions really in the chat. So let's get back to this screen share, see if it works now.
Sure.
So this next one, you said there's a bit of a story or an anecdote to this.
Just anecdotally. I mean, that one was, I remember I was sick as a dog. Yeah. Okay, cool. It's working. That's good. I remember I was really sick. This was right before Christmas. We went to visit the in-laws in southern Utah. And so where was this? This was, Valley of Fire, State Park, just outside of Las Vegas. And normally I'm the kind of person that I don't want anybody in my photo. I don't like people in my landscape photos. But when I was looking at this, I thought, man, that actually is a perfect, person there position to give a sense of scale. And also the way the curve in the rock kind of leads up to her. Cause I remember, I was like, I was just really sick. I was exhausted. And I think I was shooting daggers at her with my eyes because I'm like, just get, like, what a sense of entitlement I had, like, get out of my frame. Like, where am I to say that? But in the end, I was ultimately really grateful. This is one of those photos where I held the iPhone upside down to kind of give more of that foreground look. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And the sun is, that's 100% natural, that flare on the top right there.
Yeah,
So I was happy with that.
So, yeah, without the person in the frame, it would be very difficult to get a sense of scale there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, you could look at the foreground and you could see the detail in it and that. But I mean, you really don't know how big it is or how small it is or whatever, right? There's no plant life in there to give it away that's noticeable anyway. I think there is some in the, central part of the frame to the right. You can see some shrubs by the looks of it, but they're backlit. So they're kind of in shadow and it's hard to tell just how big they could possibly be. But, interesting.
Yeah. This photo here I use as for people who don't treat their iPhone camera with the same discipline as a mirrorless or DSLR. So the first issue of the newsletter I mentioned, the Lightroom Everywhere newsletter, the first issue that I released was it was an article, a pretty lengthy article, and I called it I think I called it smartphone photography apologetics, because I was just kind of at the point where it's like, I'm tired of having to qualify. Oh, but this was taken with an iPhone. Well, okay. Well,
yeah.
Does a chef say, I cooked this on my Viking range? Like, no. No one cares.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's like, I'm tired of this. To like almost like I'm handicapping myself in terms of like, you know what I mean? Like I'm setting myself up for some sort of on a curve. Like, oh well, you know what? This was actually with an iPhone, so you know, go easy on me. You know, understand that I'm operating on. But the point in the article, and I stand by this, is if you take the time to find a good composition and a good subject, or actually it should be the first, you find a good subject and you compose it well and you have good light, and all three of those things are very subjective. So there's no like formula here, you know, mm-hmm. lather, rinse, repeat. It's whatever it is to you. But if you can get those three elements, the camera will not let you down. Like the camera, and in this case here, the iPhone will perform. And so, I mean, the original version of this photo, you should know, is very, very, very similar to this edited version. It's not like I did much at all. The only thing I did with in a flagrant sort of way was, if you look at the foreground, it's slightly out of focus. And that's because I used the lens blur tool in Lightroom to kind of simulate a slightly shallow plane of focus. So the eye kind of really jumps to the background. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the clouds were there. The sun was almost at the horizon. So it was this really beautiful light. And it was just after a pretty gnarly storm. This is Arches National Park, by the way, in Moab, Utah. On that same trip with, you know, as the Valley of Fire one. And actually I can see as the next photo, but point is, like, don't sell yourself short, or don't, even worse, don't kind of put yourself in the mindset of, oh, well, you know, it's just my iPhone. So I don't really, I'm just going to hold the phone. I'm just going to take the photo. I'm not going to really think about it. I do have my gripes, and I'm happy to talk about it. I do have my gripes with Apple, with how they call this thing a professional camera, but they make me tie both hands behind my back in how I want to use it.
Yeah.
There are these inane restrictions. Like, if I want to set the ISO or the shutter speed, I can't use 48 megapixels. I have to be bumped down to 12 megapixels.
Yeah, that's maddening.
It's lunacy. Mm-hmm. Same thing if I want to get a Bayer DNG file versus a ProRAW, which is technically it's a partially cooked RAW file going through Apple's Photonics engine. The nice thing about a Bayer photo is that in Lightroom, you can use Lightroom's insanely competent AI powered denoise only if you shoot raw. If you shoot pro raw, no go.
Yeah, it has noise reduction applied.
It has noise reduction applied and sharpening and some, you know, color stuff and HDR. And I get it. It's great. But man, already, like, if you want it to be a pro thing, make it a pro thing. Let me set the exposure longer than 1 second.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for sure. Without simulating it. Like, I'll buy the ND filter. I'll buy the filter adapter. Let me do it. Mm-hmm. I want to do it. So that's I feel better. I feel that was cathartic. Yeah. guys,
well, we're always welcome to rants here. Dave, sometimes Dave will get his soapbox out too. So,
And honestly, and I would be happy if they made it where even it was a hidden. You don't even have to put the switch in the camera.
Absolutely.
Make us go to settings, make us go to camera, and then do, you know, advanced pro.
Correct.
And that way, and we've said this on the podcast, and this isn't first off our head. Apple's a 90-90 company. For 90% of the people, 90% of the time, that's what Apple's shooting for.
Yes.
And so, yeah, Pro Raw is great for that. If you have that little sliver, though, give them the option, but okay, make them jump through hoops or make it a little hidden so the average person won't accidentally turn it on, then realize, why is my photo look so horrible? Well, yeah, because you hit an option there that you didn't really want to, and now you can't figure out how to undo it.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So it's kind of one of those things. I'm like, maybe next year, you know. And the thing is, they don't announce it at WWDC. They announce it at the iPhone event, you know, or they would announce it. They don't, because they're not going to tell you that that will be a feature of the iPhone 16, not a feature of iOS 18. So
it should be, and it should be. There's nothing hardware stopping them from doing it.
Yeah. No, I would love to have a half hour with one of the camera engineers to genuinely ask, like, are you telling me that, is it a heating issue? Is it a battery issue to keep? Because there's no aperture. I mean, it's a fixed aperture, I should say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So is it a matter of the sensor collecting light for, but then you can use these other apps to expose for 30 seconds or longer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's taking a bunch of photos, but
yeah.
Anyway, so sorry.
No, that's
totally okay.
But before we move on to the next photo, Scott did mention in chat how the photo has a tilt shift feel about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Great call. So Photoshop has a tilt shift filter that will simulate that. This does not. Or Lightroom doesn't, but I totally see what he means. Generally, with tilt shift, you want to get that kind of miniature toy world look. You really want to be above, which I kind of I was, not much, but I was kind of above the subject. I like that. That's actually a good point. I hadn't. Yeah. That's not the effect I was going for. I was just trying to really facilitate the viewer's eye to go straight to the center. Mm-hmm. Also because I didn't want to crop the composition. I like the composition as it was, but that foreground, if I were to show you the version without the lens blur, it's just a bunch of shrubs. So.
Yeah. 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 I think the blur really draws the eye. It allows the eye to go towards the center of the frame, which is where all the detail is and the real subject matter, like the meat of the sandwich, if you will.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And Scott says, about I think he's talking about iPhone's lack of pro features in the camera app, unincredible. And that's kind of an inside joke with the Bloody Legends admin group, where, you know, a bunch of us get on in iMessage and talk about different things. And the last iPhone announcement, I think it was, where they said incredible over and over and over again. So that lack of pro ability in the pro phone is unincredible.
It's very unincredible.
Yeah.
I also especially like when they say, and we think you're going to love it.
Yeah. And just another quick note on the pro stuff. Frederick Van Johnson invited me on This Week in Photo to talk about.
Such a great guy.
He's awesome. Is the iPhone ready for pro use yet? And, you know, I couldn't make a case for it being really used by professionals for other than, you know, the odd shot maybe, but I mean, you're not going to make a living with it. And that was before the 15 Pro Max came out. Now that the 15 Pro Max came out, I think there's an argument for professional use, but only for video.
Correct,
because it has Apple Prolog and all that stuff, and you know of the stuff I've seen that's done with that is absolutely amazing. But as far as the still camera goes, no, it's not ready for pro use, I don't think.
Correct, 100%. There are numerous things that a professional photographer would need, even operating within the constraints of the smaller optics and the smaller sensor. There are just basic photography functionality, camera functionality that a pro would need. that they would not want to hand off to the Photonics engine, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I really like this image here. Again, this is in a Moab, I guess it was.
Yep, at Arches National Park. It's just kind of a another illustration of this is more of a less about mobile and more about the importance of finding more creative ways of presenting the subject. So most of the photos of these double arches that you'll see are in front of the shrubs, and it's just kind of this photo of both arches. Mm-hmm. And so I took several steps back and found these shrubs and was able to kind of create this natural frame that complements the shape. It's almost like a natural vignette for the arches. And again, there is the lens blur is applied to the kind of right, lower right, and mm-hmm. and kind of bottom part of the frame. And this isn't for effect so much. Maybe it is, but because the nature of the fixed aperture, anything that's just within, you know, in front of, I don't know, maybe a foot in front of the camera, from that point on, everything is sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. The depth of field is crazy.
Correct. And so in these situations, I need to kind of rely on software. You know, it'd be cool if I would be okay if Apple wanted to, as an option, maybe within even the photos editor or through computational photography, they do that actually with portrait mode.
Sure, yeah.
But it would be cool to have some sort of a control, like a linear gradient or something that I can say, like, all right, this is out of focus, and then fall it off into focus. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, but that's getting outside of the 90-90 though. But you know, absolutely. What they should, like Dave said earlier, they should make it a hidden thing. You know, they there's no reason why they can't do some of this stuff to satisfy the 10%.
Sure.
And I'd argue the case that it's much less than 10% that would probably use something like that. Yes. But hey, why not give it to us?
I mean, it's in the Lightroom Mobile too. You can decide the
lens I've used it, effect.
Yeah, it's great. The one thing I wish it had that the desk, well, there are a few things that the desktop version has, but like there's a brush where you can brush focus back in. But
that's cool.
Yeah, Kevin's mentioning in chat that the Focus app, FOCOS, kind of has that option where you can select what you want to have depth wise and it'll adjust.
Yes.
FOCOS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that app, Brian, came out back when I had my 8 Plus, and I wrote a blog post about things back then, about the gap getting smaller. So like the gap between traditional DSLR photography and iPhone photography, and because of the way that it captured depth information, you can change the, albeit fake, aperture and all that stuff. You know, they started it all before Apple did. You know, you would think that they would have got Sherlocked by it, but no, they're still going. I think Bending Spoons might be the owner of that app now. The team that had Focus, they've sold it.
It is, you're correct. It is Bending Spoons.
Yeah. And luckily they haven't destroyed it or, you know, ruined it like Heavy Plum did with Camera Plus. But I think they've fixed it, so that's another tangent. It's pretty powerful, and like Dave says, you can mask, you know, you can get the focus back in areas and things like that. You can really play around with it. It's pretty impressive. Go ahead.
My only, it's easy. Okay, I could be missing something, but the problem I have is a matter of versioning, where, okay, I can, I, for, so for example, with this photo, or even pretty much any of the photos, the way my workflow would work is I would go into Lightroom Mobile. I would create a new album, year, month, month, day, dash Arches National Park mm-hmm. shoot. And then I, on that album in Lightroom, I would set to auto import. So, and then I would not launch Lightroom at all day. I'd spend the day shooting. And then whenever I was done, I would connect the iPhone to power and I would launch Lightroom, and it would ingest all of the photos from the moment I enabled that option. So now I have these photos in Lightroom. I also have these photos in Camera Roll, because Lightroom will copy them, but not remove them. Once I confirm that Lightroom has backed them up, I delete them from the Camera Roll. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because now in Lightroom, that is version one.
Okay.
So let's say I were to want to use Focus. Well, now I need to export that photo out of Lightroom and open it up in Focus mm-hmm. and apply my edit and save that. So now I have a version two, which I now have to import into Lightroom. And then do I keep both versions? At what point do I make my edits? So this is why it would have to be a fantastic, I mean, it would have to be something truly stellar for me to just take it outside of Lightroom and Photoshop, with the exception of Photoshop, because they round trip very nicely, even on mobile. So that's kind of my only mm-hmm. thing, you know, being the wet blanket.
Yeah. This image here, I believe you use this image in your tutorial about the masking. Is that correct?
It might have been.
One looks familiar.
Yeah, I mean, this was more just like working within the confines of mobile photography when it comes to wildlife, the wildlife genre.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you would even call this wildlife, but it is. I mean, it's a bird at a local wetland preserve. But so Dave, you were earlier talking about how with your wife shooting the moon and using the 5X plus digital zoom. That's the other thing that I never use is digital zoom. And only because I don't have a good reason. I just stick with what I said earlier. If I'm going to do it, I want to do it optically. So like that image, I could have used digital zoom. That was just I can't even remember if that was the 14 Pro or the 15 Pro Max. So it's either 3X or 5X. But what I will do sometimes, I don't know if it's even ironic, but I will sometimes crop in and then use like Topaz Photo AI or Gigapixel to upscale it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So, but yeah, this is more just kind of like my ode to wildlife photography using an iPhone.
Yeah. I like the lighting. It looks like mid to late afternoon lighting.
Correct.
Or morning, maybe even. The bird is in silhouette, but what I really like about it is the fact that you've caught the beak slightly open and it's still showing. Like it's not you can still see the sky through that little opening. It's not blurred or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just it's there. It's present. You can see it, and it really works. Lots of sharp, crisp detail, and very natural looking.
Thank you. Yeah, it's this place is just such a what a gift. This preserve is 10 minutes from my house, completely free. You just park and walk in, and it's like a mile and a half, beautifully manicured boardwalk right over the water, or this kind of the nice wetlands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And all these birds. So I am not a wildlife photographer. I enjoy it, but I just wanted to see how far I can push the iPhone. So
yeah. Now, this is cool. This is one of my favorite types of photography to do, and it's long exposure, day or night.
Yeah. This is 14 Pro Max for sure, because I remember I was like, oh, man, I wish this. But I knew the iPhone event was coming, so I have to look at the metadata, the EXIF of the date I took this. But this was – I was practicing with – this was re-expose because I had my tripod. So I was practicing with different exposures. And there's another version of this photo taken off to the side, which is a much longer exposure. I think, but it looks more, oh, it's not the, it, it, yeah, it's, it was just kind of like the pier at from an angle.
Yeah.
But I'm a sucker for under pier shots.
Yeah. Yeah. They look really cool. I don't have anything like this around me to shoot. I'd have to go, I don't know, somewhere else to do it. We have local harbors in some of the towns around here, but they're basically break walls. No piers like this. But, you know, it's another testament of the dynamic range that's capable in the iPhone. You know, the detail underneath the pier, right next to the sky, the bright sky on either side of it. And yes, sure, you can optimize that in editing. But I would imagine, I'm just guessing, that you didn't have to do a whole lot.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's the thing with iPhone editing. Like you despite the latitude that you're given, you still have to exert restraint to a degree.
Yep.
Because it's very easy for you to start crushing colors, crushing tone. And so, yeah, that's also why I, even though I have to revert down to 12 megapixels, I generally shoot in RAW, not in Pro RAW, because I'm getting actual sensor data, like full 12 megapixels. I'll do the noise reduction, I'll do the tone mapping. Well, that's the other thing, it's absolutely maddening that I can't just do proper auto exposure bracketing. Like some of the apps that do it, I don't know why, but they bracket by ISO, which is lunacy. Like absolute Luna Moment does that. They have an HDR bracketing mode, and it brackets by ISO. So you'll get your three exposures. Mm-hmm. One of them is going to be completely like Rice Krispies, like full on noise.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just I don't understand. It's not like Moment doesn't want to do it. I just don't think Apple supports that.
That's interesting. I've got a few different camera apps on my phone, like Camera M. They tout bracketing in their app, but I haven't tried it to see
how they
go about it. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm going to have to try that this week.
I'm looking for this photo here. When did I take it? I don't know why it's not in here, but yeah, I want to see how far I pushed it. Oh, wait, here it is. I think I found it. So this is the photo. Let's see what. So that's the original.
Oh, okay.
There were some swimmers over here.
Oh.
And as you can see, and this was on a tripod. Let's see what the EXIF. So this was 3 seconds, re-expose. And yeah, so that's the edit. Slightly off-centered. Had to straighten the horizon, brought out some of the sky details, got rid of the swimmers.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. But then this was the other photo that I was mentioning that I actually really, I love this photo. So this was 45 seconds with the re-expose on a tripod. Mm. Oh, this was a 15 Pro Max. Okay, I guess I got, maybe this was, I was waiting for the, that's what I think it was. I was waiting for the pre-production model of the re, reflex lenses. So yeah, here's the lens test. So just doing some tests, like with the anamorphic, for example. So,
oh yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, there's still so much that you can do. I'm not even pretending, don't even take it for a second that I'm like, oh, you know, like I said, like I'm not handicapping myself because I'm using an iPhone. I think I'm with you. I think it's, I'm really bullish about it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have no regrets of getting rid of my DSLR, but I went into it knowing full well there would be limitations, and but some of those limitations are overcome now with some of the capabilities of this thing. So
that's right.
I mean, the biggest limitation, obviously, I think, is reach. You know, you're not going to do much wildlife photography with an iPhone. That goes without saying. So. Dave, you got any questions you want to ask Brian before we
No, wrap, I mean, up here? I think it's been great to see these shots, and you know, Brian's much more of an expert. Definitely, I mean, to hear someone who knows the Adobe products a lot more in depth and your thought process behind it, I think it's been great. And
thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. I mean, it's fun. It's just fun.
Yeah.
You know what? Rick Salmon said that same thing, Brian. Mm-hmm. I had him on the show just after he got back from Morocco, and mm-hmm. he only took his iPhone on that trip. And he said it, you know, it was so liberating to not have to carry around all the big gear and all that stuff. So I asked him, excuse me, I asked him, why is it that a lot of, you know, pro photographers are bringing out their iPhones a lot more? And he said, because it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. You know, with all the apps, the different apps you could use, different camera apps, there's so much choice. The ease of editing, you know, shoot, edit, share. Can all happen within a minute if you want. Mm-hmm. It's just so much fun. You don't have to wait until you get home to put everything on your computer and all that stuff. And I think that's probably what drew me to it in the beginning, was the fact that it was fun to do and, you know, quick and easy, and that was it. So, but yeah, well, that's pretty cool.
I'd like your takes on this, because this is something that I've been deliberating over, because one of the things that makes it fun is that it can go from your pocket to camera mode in seconds. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I and I've brought this up a few times during our conversation, things like using filters or using lenses and using the one of the things I love about the Polar Pro light chaser kit is that grip that you can add onto it. And so, like, I feel like, you know, one of the whole the hallmarks of mobile photography is that kind of simplicity and kind of straightforwardness. And I wonder if I'm kind of bastardizing that in a way, in like trying to make it's something that, or like trying to defile the spirit of mobile photography by, yeah. Well, so that's kind of something I've been thinking about.
You know, honestly, it's, I don't think you're, I don't want to use the term bastardizing it. I mean, mobile photography is whatever one wants to make of it themselves.
Sure.
I truly believe that, you know, if you're someone who, like, I don't use anything external for a couple reasons. Honestly, I'm cheap. I don't like buying stuff for it. A lot of times when I'm taking photos, it's somewhat spur of the moment, or I'm out doing something. So I don't want to necessarily carry, you know, I'm not going out to take photos.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going out to do something, or I'm going out on a run, or I'm going on a walk. And I don't necessarily want to carry and take everything that's an attachment to it. But it's similar to like someone who takes a computer or takes a tool and says, you know what, this is a simple tool, but I want to mod it.
Yes.
You know,
sure.
You know, it's similar to like cars. And like, you know, you could just have your stock car and maybe put a sticker on it to make it look a little different from all the other cars out there. Or you could say, I love to do all the hands-on, get dirty and add this here, remove this here, even though it's a lot harder these days than it used to be with everything it's integrated with. But, you know, it's like, oh, I want to add this, or I want to convert this, or I have this thing I got from a store and I want to completely mod it up and add things on to it type thing.
Right.
And it's whatever people like to do. I truly am believing that, you know, whatever, as long as you're not hurting anyone,
sure.
Enjoy. If you enjoy doing it, go for it. There should be no, well, that's not real mobile photography. And this is only certain things. Who cares?
Yeah.
You're not hurting anyone. Enjoy it.
I'm with you.
With you. You know, there's the true mobile experience, which is just the phone. That's basically a true mobile experience. But then there's those who want to take a photographic approach to it by using add-on lenses, you know, third-party apps for this or that or whatever, tripods, lighting. You know, there's some people that just want to challenge themselves, I guess, to doing practicing photography, but just using the phone as their camera. Right. Everything else is still in play, reflectors, whatever, you know, like for portraiture. I mean, look at, boy, my head is just not with it today. Russell Brown.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that he does is mind-boggling, but and he shoots with a phone. But I mean, he's employee number three at Adobe.
Yeah.
So he's been around for quite some time in that space where he's got a lot of knowledge and resources at his disposal, and he can really make something out of like an iPhone image.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Greg.
I was just gonna say. Kevin Barrett in the chat says, you know, using the phone is fun and convenient, and it certainly is convenient. He also says you can create your own adventure.
Sure. Absolutely.
In this space.
Yeah. I mean, it's more, that was more kind of something I've been thinking about philosophically, because I had seen some comments on some of the videos I've done that focus more on either the, you know, lenses or the filters, and they're like, well, at this point I might as well just take my camera with me. But I mean, I get that to a degree, but when you see, like, for example, you know, the whole big thing with Apple's, the M3 event they did Halloween just a few months ago. And I think the fact that the little, you know, credit at the end saying this was filmed using an iPhone 15 mm-hmm. Pro Max, I think almost overshadowed the actual M3 announcement. It kind of goes with what I was saying in terms of, you know, if you take the time to find a good subject, to compose it well, and to have good light, the camera will do in this case, the iPhone will take care of you. And I think the same principle can be applied in terms of, I don't think there's anything wrong with adapting the phone kind of also to what, you know, in line with what Dave was saying, like, do what you want, like, have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not gonna, like, there are times when I use my Sony and I'm like, oh man, like, yeah, like, I forgot what having, you know, 400 millimeters yeah. and a variable aperture. And when I start massaging the raw files in Lightroom and how much more latitude I have. But it's such a, then I remember, like, yeah, it is kind of a pain in the butt to have to carry like 15 to 30 pounds of gear with me, plus a giant tripod. Whereas with this, everything is kind of mini. I think I'm simpatico with what you guys are saying. So,
yeah. We'll just do one last quick question here, and then we'll tie it off here. But sure. Will Newcomb in the chat says polarizing filters, where you can get a linear polarizer filter for iPhone. Where can you get one, I guess? Or is everything CPL?
No. Well, so I have been using Maven filters, which I think you just go to mavenfilters.com. They're magnetic filters. They're they're awesome. Well, these are just a few of them, but obviously the people on the podcast will have to use their imagination. But so this, let's see here. This here is a, let me see if I can get it to focus.
Yep,
there we go.
This is a, okay, this is a regular polarizer. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. This is a circular polarizer, and you can tell it by the way it's milled on the side of the filter. It's brilliant. And then this is a circular polarizer, so it's slightly different color and it's a different milling. But the point is that functionally they're pretty much the same. You know, you twist them. I wonder if you can see if they show up on camera.
A little bit, yeah, a little. Yeah.
But the point is that they're magnetic. So when you if you are a DSLR shooter, this is really what you need to concern yourself with. If you're shooting with like a Canon 5D Mark IV or a Nikon, an older Nikon, then you're going to want a circular polarizer. You do not need to go out and buy a linear polarizer if you are shooting iPhone or mirrorless. If you have a circular polarizer, don't spend the money. It will, it, your circular will treat you just fine. However, if you don't have a polarizer or you're broke and you want to get a new one and you're shooting mirrorless or iPhone, yeah, a linear would serve you fine. So,
yeah.
It's just Maven, M-A-V-E-N. Great. I mean, just great filters. So,
yeah. Well, Brian, actually it's getting on. We've been an hour and a half. So we really, really appreciate you coming on. I've ever since I saw your channel and you started talking about iPhone stuff and then, you know, incorporating Lightroom with it and everything else, I thought, you know, man, we got to get this guy on and have a little chat. This has been great. So before we go, just tell everybody maybe where they can find you online.
Sure. It's just matiash.com, which is matiash.com, or you could go to lightroomeverywhere.com. Well, I believe that should work and that should redirect you to my website.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have a link for that in the show notes, that and your YouTube channel as well. So are you on Instagram at all or any of those?
Yeah. I mean, I'm on Instagram and Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it.
I still call it Twitter.
Yeah, I call Twitter too. it just sounds silly saying I'm on X. That's like borderline adult. Like what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on Instagram as Brian Matiash, but I mean, I think Instagram has gotten to the point where I just don't find much enjoyment out of it anymore, to be honest.
Well, you're not alone with that one either. I don't post there nearly as much as I used to, that's for sure. But
Exactly.
You know, I do keep it open and post once in a while, but okay. Well, and Dave, you can be found on your usual socials.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere is ProfPod except for TikTok, where I'm ProfPodPGH.
Alrighty. And you can find me, all my links are at about.me/McMillan. And again, thanks, Brian. It's been a wonderful conversation and we'll definitely be keeping in touch.
Thank you guys so much. This was a blast. And yeah, I would love to keep in touch.
Yeah. And thank you to everybody who stuck around for the live stream, hiccups and all. you know, we'll get good at this someday, won't we, Dave?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. all right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, on the live. And again, you know, the podcast, the audio will come out Wednesday morning, and you can see the images that we talked about in your podcast player if you have an enhanced podcast player like the Apple Podcasts or Overcast. Sorry, Spotify won't do it, but most of our listeners are on the Apple podcast app. So you'll be able to see what we're talking about there. And, you know, to go to the website. If you can't see them there, you can go to the website and see them there. They'll be on the post for this episode. So thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll see you all in the next one.